I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. You know spring has arrived when we welcome horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark back to the program. So good to see you.
Happy spring.
Exactly. Well, it has been a long winter, lots of snow. It seemed like every Wednesday
we
had a snowstorm. So what does that mean for the garden?
Well, most things will be fine. As I do clean up in my yard and as I drive around the Cape, I do see where there is a lot of damage on a variety of different plants. You know, you look at where snowplows scalped lawns. You look at hydrangeas that have a lot of dead sticks. You look at various plants that aren't up, and you wonder what happened to them. I told you about I had taken a chance and put my fig in the ground, three or four years ago, based on a story that Jenny has a big fig at her house, and I've actually seen it, and it's huge, and it's wonderful, and it's live every year. So I put mine in the ground about three or four years ago and have been very successful with it, and this year it's dead
not
as a
so
doornail.
Much,
so it's like, it's an opportunity to do something new.
That's a nice positive attitude. So yeah, people are picking up the sticks and cleaning up the yard now from all that damage. But the actual snow cover itself, does it impact? I mean, I guess it impacts wildlife in the fact that we've got more voles, moles, and rabbits because the snow cover sort of helped them out.
Well, snow cover actually is like a nice winter mulch. Some things that are maybe marginally hardy have now had, you know, basically a foot of snow on them most of the winter, and it actually protects them somewhat. It does provide a great habitat under the snow for particularly voles. They'll tunnel under the snow and start feeding on your woody plants before you even know it, and you don't see the damage till the snow melts. Mm. So that's a problem.
Yeah, and so with the numbers of voles, obviously, you know, the birds of prey aren't seeing the voles when they're under the snow, so
that's
it may
right.
seem like we have a lot of them, but that'll even itself out now that there's no snow.
Well, it usually does. You know, we have a number of predators. The coyote population seems to be down, at least in my neighborhood, but, you know, you hear stories of fisher cats moving across the Cape, obviously wild cats birds of prey and things like that. And after a time, the population does level off. But I've seen my big problem is rabbits. And I always thought they sort of hibernated over the winter, but apparently they don't, because I'm finding on the stems of many of my small trees and many of my shrubs, I'm seeing lots of gnawing. And the gnawing's too big to be a vole. It's perfect for a rabbit. So I'm concerned about that.
Not much we can do.
No. The other problem with the rabbits, now that spring has sprung and the snow is gone, we have fresh, tender green stuff coming up. And my crocus were looking beautiful. And then they were nibbled to the ground. And what's most heartbreaking to me, I have three gorgeous Casablanca lilies that were coming up, and I was anticipating these fabulous flowers later in summer. They're now down to the ground, too. And it's the rabbits. I know because I find their fertilizer.
Ah. Yeah. I've seen a couple of rabbits in my backyard, too, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed that they don't hang around. But, you know, maybe the dog will deter them a little bit. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you have a gardening question or story for us this morning. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So this, of course, is not only the time for cleanup, but the time to amend the soil.
Yes.
And there are lots of different things we can do there, right?
Yes, yes.
So what do we want to
well,
do?
Well, if you could get it, I really love old rotted cow manure. It's in short supply on the Cape. I used to order it by the yard for the demonstration gardens at the fairgrounds, and it came from off Cape. I believe there are a couple of companies on the Cape that can get it, so you'd have to call around. I'm using this year composted cow manure that you buy in bags. It's not the dehydrated, it's the composted. I think the difference is there can be some high soluble salts in the dehydrated, and if you don't mix it properly, Sometimes it can burn tender roots. So I like the composted cow manure, and it's available at local garden centers and at hardware stores. And I'm putting 3 bags on each of my 4x12-foot raised beds. And I'm thinking that's going to be good. But you do have to add some kind of organic material to your gardens on an annual basis. In a vegetable garden, you can use compost, composted cow manure, the real deal if you can find it. Horse manure, if it's aged, you really don't want to use it fresh, particularly if it has lots of shavings in it. It has sort of an inhibitory effect on plant growth. But you need to add something because every year the plants use it, the microbes use it, it breaks down. And it's easy in a vegetable garden. You can turn it in. In your perennial gardens, a nice top dressing, maybe an inch, spread over, will work its way down into the soil over time and add organic material.
So when you're looking, as you know, I have these huge perennial beds. To buy all that cow manure would be crazy. But instead of mulch, I use compost.
That's just fine.
Yeah, so then it sort of works itself
in. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
When you're looking at the manures, cow manure, horse manure, there's also, you can get the chicken. Powder. Are they equal? Is there one better than the other?
I prefer cow manure. That's just my own personal choice. There's usually a difference in the nitrogen content. And if you're buying it by the bag, certainly look at the bag to see. Chicken manure tends to be much higher in nitrogen than the cow or the horse manure. If you have neighbors that have rabbits, sheep, or goats, consider helping them reduce the size of their manure pile and try some of that. So I think my preference is cow, but I'd use any of it if that was what I had available.
It was available.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't really matter what you're growing then.
I don't think so. Yeah. Some people will disagree with me, but I just think the importance of putting organic material, regardless
whatever
of the type.
Yeah.
The ones to avoid, you don't want to use milorganite in a vegetable garden. It's a great product for lawns or flower gardens, and apparently it acts very well as a deer repellent.
Oh, really?
But you would not want to put that in your vegetable garden.
Susan is giving us a call from Westport. Good morning, Susan.
Yes, good morning, Roberta, and good morning, Mindy. I have a question about a last year gardening problem. I planted all the brassica families, cabbages, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts.
Uh-huh.
Soil was amended well. Everything was great. They were beautiful, tall plants, especially the Brussels sprouts, but not one single Brussels sprout matured. What happened?
Isn't that weird? What time of year did you put them in?
I put them in. Actually, I started them as seedlings, so they were really healthy. As I said, the broccoli did everything right, so I probably put them in end of May, maybe.
That sounds great. Were they in full sun?
Totally full sun, totally amended soil. I check it, take it and test it every year. And the broccoli never stopped giving us off sprouts, and the cabbages matured, except for two due to club foot.
Club root, yes.
And then nothing. Beautiful Brussels sprouts. Leaf-wise.
What did you use for a soil amendment?
And I protected them with row covers and everything.
Okay, well, that's the right way to do it. What did you use for a soil amendment?
I added last year what I was told to add. I think we added some extra phosphorus.
Okay. What was the nitrogen source? Do you know?
The nitrogen source I had added the year before through the blood meal. Blood meal.
Yeah, that's high nitrogen. And if you look at cabbage, broccoli, and cauliflower, that might be a little too much for the Brussels sprouts.
Too much for the Brussels sprouts.
What the sprouts are little immature buds, actually, flower buds, like little baby cabbages in the leaf axle.
All the farther they got. They ended up being only a quarter inch big this summer.
Yeah. This year, don't put any nitrogen where you're growing those. Use your other supplements, but avoid the nitrogen and see how they do. Also, did you limed the soil so the pH was around 6.5 to 7?
Yes, I actually added a bit, turned into the soil when I planted.
Okay. I would suggest having a soil test done. You can have a complete soil test done at the University of Massachusetts. I believe it's still just a $10 charge. And they'll actually make a recommendation for the different levels of materials to put in. When you're doing it organically and you're using the individual elements, the blood meal, the bone meal, the phosphorus, sometimes it's difficult to get just the right balance. And so sometimes you'll have great, wonderful, healthy plants, but they're not producing the part
True.
That you want to eat. So my suggestion would...
So a quick added question then would be, they told me this year through the test that I have too much phosphorus and potassium, and nitrogen's fine.
Yeah.
Will the phosphorus too much of those two... items affect growth this year too?
I think you'll probably be okay. I think the one you want to avoid is adding more nitrogen to the area.
Okay. Great. That solved my problem. It's wonderful to hear, and wonderful to hear you on the air again.
Oh, thank you. Happy spring.
Susan, thanks for the call.
Same to you both.
866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Last year, I planted some strawberries, and they must have been some kind of everbearing because I would get some strawberries periodically through the whole season. I was thinking, do you think pine needles would be a good mulch because of would there be the acid in the pine
actually,
needles?
Actually, strawberries don't require acid soil.
They don't.
No, they actually want a pH right around 6.5, just like most fruits. Blueberries want a very acidic soil, and pine needles would be fine for them. You could use pine needles for strawberries because they don't actually break down and change the pH of the soil very quickly. My strawberry bed I'm replanting this year, being my plants were about 5 or 6 years old, and usually that's about it for a strawberry bed. And I plant a variety called Seascape, which are ever-bearing, but they're actually day neutral, I guess is the correct term. They have a big crop in June, scattered berries across the summer, and then a big crop right up until frost with good-sized berries, and they're very sweet. So if you can find Seascape, if you're interested in putting in strawberries and you'd like to have them the entire season, it's a fabulous variety.
Seascape, we'll make a note of that. Since we're in the vegetable garden, let's talk about some of your favorite vegetable varieties.
Yes. Well, I've planted, one bed is already planted. I have my Arcadia broccoli. I've been growing this for years. Usually I start it from seed, but I found a local vendor who starts it by individual pots from seed. And when I was starting plants for the fairgrounds, you know, I'd start 6 packs, but I don't need 6 broccoli plants. I don't have a big freezer, and I'm not going to eat all that broccoli. So you can buy individual plants to suit your need, and they had that variety. For my cauliflower, a good standard is snow crown, and that's what you will find at most garden centers. If you're doing it from seed, Fremont is the one I like best. I don't have a single variety of lettuce that is my favorite. I just love lots of lettuces.
I planted so many different varieties of lettuce. You can't go wrong.
For zucchini, it's still too early for zucchini, but, you know, we like to plan ahead. There's an Italian variety called Costato Romanesco, and it's just a solid scallop-shaped zucchini that is very nutty and firm when you cook it. Fabulous flavor. For tomatoes, I haven't met a tomato I didn't like, although last year my favorite was a very old heirloom that I grew called Virginia Sweets, and it had a monster size, bright yellow, flushed with red tomato, and it was just so good. I will grow it again this year. So those are some of them. Oh, and kale. My favorite kale is the Tuscan kale. Toscana di Nero or something like that.
Yeah.
And I saw it being sold locally in 6 packs. So something to think about.
Right, exactly. I just planted kale this year. I have not planted kale before. And I thought, why haven't I done that? I love kale.
It's a great, great, great vegetable.
Exactly. We're talking with horticulturist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Let's talk about asparagus. If you've ever thought about growing asparagus, you should. Even though I know it takes a few years before you get anything really, but it does not taste anything like the asparagus you buy in the store.
I can't believe that as a kid I would not eat asparagus, because now it's one of my favorite vegetables, particularly at this time of the year. I'm still buying it at the grocery store because mine's not up yet, but it's just a wonderful, wonderful vegetable. I started an asparagus bed at the fairgrounds in 1989. It's still producing. I put a bed in one of my raised beds at home probably 6 years ago. I'm adding to it this year because I just can't get enough of it. It's a great crop, and once you plant it, it's said the average asparagus bed will last 25 years. The one at the fairgrounds is older than that now. So it will last a long, long time. And it's very simple to grow. Once it's in the ground, it's weed-free. Yeah. If you mulch it, it's, you know, you don't do anything except cut down the old stalks in the fall. Right now, if you're interested in asparagus, you can buy dormant crowns at most garden centers, and they look totally dead. just a bunch of roots coming off a crown. Prepare your soil well and dig a long trench. It used to be, if you read instructions for planting asparagus, they would say you need to plant it 10 inches deep. Well, you don't. 6 to 8 inches is fine. So you dig a long trench and make it wide so you can space out the roots, and you put the dormant crowns about 10 to 12 inches apart, with the growing point facing up. And if you look at them, you'll see which end is up. And then fill them in with a couple of inches of soil and wait for the young shoots to come up, and then gradually fill in that trench. Now, asparagus are fairly heavy feeders, so initially you want to amend the soil with lots of organic matter. If you're using an organic fertilizer, look for something that's fairly good in nitrogen. If you're using a standard fertilizer, a 10-10-10 will work fine. Keep them watered, keep them mulched, keep them weeded, and don't pick your asparagus for about 3 years. Let those ferns grow. It looks like an asparagus fern, which is where it's that pretty, fern yeah. gets its name, so it's very pretty. And what happens is photosynthesis takes place, carbohydrates are produced, they're transported down into the root system, and by the end of 3 years, you have a nice, healthy crown that's capable of being harvested. The shoots are harvested for 25 or more years.
Do you harvest all of the shoots, or do you let some grow into the fern?
Usually the really, really skinny ones I will leave because I like an asparagus at least the size of my little finger. And I get lots of really fat ones too. And surprisingly, they cook just as fast as the skinny ones when they're fresh like that. The first year you'll harvest for maybe 2 or 3 weeks. The second year, after you begin harvesting, you'll harvest for maybe 3 or 4 weeks. And by the third year of harvesting, you can harvest for about 6 weeks. And then you let the ferns go and replenish the crowns right up until frost, and right. then cut them down.
Yeah, you want to cut them down once they start to turn yellow.
Yes, yeah. yes. The All thing right. to look for, though, is there are two beetles that they're both called asparagus beetle. One is the spotted asparagus beetle. One is the checkered asparagus beetle. And they have these little tiny slug-like larvae that will strip the ferns. So you do need to pay attention. And if you see those, then some spinosad will take care of them. So keep an eye out for that.
All right. Nan from Brewster says she loves the garden show. Having a problem with our resident bunny eating our fairy bonica roses, thinking of replanting in a very large planter, which would elevate them enough so our bunny won't be able to reach. Would that be healthy for the roses, or do you have a suggestion on a natural rabbit repellent? Well, we wish we knew of that, something like
if
that.
If I did, it would have been on my Casablanca lilies. It's too late for them. They'll regrow, but I don't think I'll have blossoms this year. Next year, I am going to, as soon as I see them poking out of the ground, I'm going to put a ring of chicken wire around them.
I'm going to do that to mine because mine are coming up.
Yeah. Rabbits are broad jumpers, not high jumpers. So you could leave your rose in the ground and put a ring of chicken wire around it. That's at least 24 inches high. That's about the only height you need to prevent rabbits from getting in. Or you could put it up in a bigger container. You just want to make sure it has plenty of room for root space. So too small a container, the rose is not going to do well. Particularly for winter hardiness, you need a large amount of soil to insulate the roots because it's now above the ground and it's subject to ambient temperature rather than in the ground where it stays sort of a constant temperature. But sure, it will grow fine in a container. Or if you want to leave it in the ground, try. The chicken wire is not the most attractive in the world, but once it gets some good growth on it, you could take the chicken wire away and admire them. They're gorgeous little roses.
It's interesting because I've had rabbits in my yard in the past, and what I found, they usually are just munching, you know, the clover and the grass, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
They have not jumped up into my vegetable beds are all raised beds, and they're, you know, 12 inches. They're not that high, but they have yet to figure out that the good stuff, the lettuce and all that, is up there. And I'm hoping that they don't figure that out.
Yeah, my beds are about six to eight inches high, and the rabbits can get into them. I have had carrot tops nibbled to the bottom. I found their little fertilizer pellets in my bed. So right now, the one bed that's planted is covered with row cover. They can't get in there. But when I do some of my other beds, I'm going to simply ring them with chicken wire.
Okay. All right, Carolyn in Woods Hole says, the last high cold winds we had came after our roadies had begun to green up for spring. They suffered terrible burn, and now the leaves at the end of the branches are brown and yellow. The tips seem to be okay. Should we do any trimming for this?
Well, I always like to take somewhat of a cautious approach. If the buds are good, they'll put out new growth, and you'll have new foliage. If the buds are dead and the end of the stems are dead, then obviously nothing's going to happen there, and you would want to prune them back to right above a bud. You'll lose whatever bloom you might have had in doing that at this time of year. So I would probably wait and see. You know, driving around, I see white pines, I see taxus, I see other evergreens near the side of the road that have all browned foliage from road salt. So we are seeing some types of winter damage. I mentioned the scalping of lawns. The other thing is we had such high winds constantly this winter, sometimes when the branches had a heavy burden of snow on them, that there's been so much breakage of limbs. Not only does it pose a challenge in cleaning up the yard, I made a giant pile of brush I was going to burn, and 'cause I've been doing a lot of pruning too, but it was green wood and I couldn't get the pile to get going. So now I'm deconstructing the pile and dragging it off into the woods. But look at your shrubs, look at your trees, see if there's broken limbs. You really might need to be out there with a nice, you know, a little folding tree saw or a good pair of loppers and do some corrective pruning. Get the dead and broken wood out of there.
Yeah, so this, we always get this question, no matter what the winter is what to prune when.
Yes.
So the things like the rhododendrons and the hydrangeas, which have had some damage, are you expecting less blooms then this year?
Well, you know, I've got quite a few hydrangeas in my yard. Some of them, the buds look good, and so I'm not touching them. And others, all I have are a collection of dead sticks. Mm. I see new growth coming at the base, but the canes themselves are brown. The buds are brown. So I'm pruning those back to live wood, and I expect, unless they were the rebloomers, which I don't have a lot of, but I'm expecting that I will have less in the way of a floral display on my hydrangeas. But it's very strange. We're talking about the blue hydrangeas.
Right.
Some, and they're not necessarily more sheltered, but some varieties, cultivars, are hardier than others. They probably have, the common one we grow is Hydrangea macrophylla, which means big leaf hydrangea. Recently, a lot of hydrangea breeding has utilized a hydrangea from Japan, Hydrangea serrata, in the breeding programs, and this is a hardier variety of or species of hydrangea. So those seem to be a little bit greener looking at them, but yeah, no, I'm pruning my hydrangeas. Right now, I'm just pruning back to what looks like live wood.
So dead stuff you're taking
dead
out.
Stuff I'm taking out. If the hydrangea has been in the ground for, say, 5 or 6 years, I'm also taking a couple of the oldest stems out right at the ground level, just to encourage new stems to come from the crown. But things like forsythia, lilacs, weigelia, these are spring bloomers, and the general rule of thumb is you prune them after they bloom. And for the summer bloomers, hydrangea paniculata and things like that, you can prune those right now. I'm having some work done on my house, and of course I've planted too many things too close to the house, and they've gotten too big. And so in order to accommodate the work that needs to be done, I've had to do some rather severe pruning on a lot of my shrubs, irregardless of the time of year. So I'm expecting to have far fewer flowers on many different shrubs this year, simply because I've had to do some severe pruning.
We're talking with horticulturist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number for your garden questions. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Going back to the trees that might be near the road that have some of that yellowing, they'll bounce back.
Well,
most of them, right?
They'll bounce back. All the area above where they were splashed with road salt is fine. That browning is not going to go away. And those particular needles are dead. And those twigs, if there was a lot of salt on the twigs themselves, the twigs may be dead. So if you have evergreens bordering your yard along a road, you might need to do some corrective pruning out there as well to get rid of dead material. That's the general rule of thumb when you're looking at plants. If there are dead limbs, take them out. Mm-hmm. If there are branches that are rubbing or crossing each other or pointed back inwards to the center of the shrub, prune them out. You want a nice open shrub where the branches don't cross or rub, and you'll have a healthier plant for it.
We were talking veggies a few minutes ago. So what can we plant now? We mentioned tomatoes and zucchini, which of course we don't want to put
late.
In.
Yeah, too early.
Too early.
Yeah,
we want to put those. But so what are the things that we can be putting in the ground now?
Well, certainly from if you visit a garden center, you'll see the things that are available in six packs include all of the coal crops, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale, lettuce, lots of lettuce in six packs. If you're like to plant mostly from seed, this is a great time to get out there and your lettuce from seed, beets and carrots from seed, Swiss chard from seed. So any of your either cool spring or cool fall vegetables can all go in the ground right now, either from plants or from seed. The warm weather crops, your peppers and summer squashes and tomatoes, we're still jumping the gun on that. Yeah. I had frost yesterday morning.
Yes. And we can have frost into May. We have
yes,
to remember that.
Like yes,
middle of May or something like that. So we want to be, I know it's so hard to be patient.
Yes.
You know, you want to put that basil in and all, but no.
That's right. Too early.
It'll end up being dead. All right. Christy is calling. She's on the road. Hi, Christy.
Hi.
Good morning.
I have a question about arborvitae.
Yes.
My parents planted some arborvitae on either side of our front door. Could be, I don't know, like a couple of decades ago. I don't know how long they last. They've gotten very tall, very, you know, just tall. They get top heavy with snow. We had to tether them to the house so that they wouldn't tip over, roots and all. I'm wondering, can those be cut down significantly, or if I want to lower the height more than a half, would I just have to pull them out and start over?
Arborvitae are one of the very few evergreens, along with a taxus or yew, that you can cut back. But they take a long time to regenerate. So if they're quite tall and you cut them back as much as I think you would like to, they're not going to look real good for a long time. It sounds as though they're actually too big for the location they're in.
Definitely. I mean, if I'd been old enough to advise them, I would never have suggested them.
Right. I had them on the corners of my house when I moved in, and they got pulled out simply because they were way too big. Of course, I replaced them with something that's now equally too big, and I have to take that out. But they'd best look best if they were replaced with something.
So yeah, so I was steering that. We have started renting the house, and it makes noise when they strain on the tethers. I didn't realize what was making me sleep so badly last week. And then I figured out it was all the wind was coming from that side of the house.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The arborvitae were straining on the tethers and knocking the house. I can imagine the renters wouldn't be too happy about it.
Yeah,
to look into just pulling them out entirely.
Yeah.
We do have some great hydrangeas that have been there since we bought the house in 1970.
Oh, wonderful.
They come back every year. One year I cut them back. You know, it's like trimming your own hair. Well, just let me cut a little bit of hair. They wound up like less than a foot tall.
Wow. Yeah.
And they came back like gangbusters.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah.
Okay, I'll deal with my hydrate.
Okay, Christy,
right.
Thanks so much for the phone call.
You're welcome.
Pamela is calling from Orleans. Hi, Pamela.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have, I've been living on this particular property for many, many years, and daffodils that probably my mother planted have turned to be frilly or almost fluffy looking, and somebody said, they've got a fungus, and I don't know. Or I thought maybe they'd just gotten so old that they were reverting to ancient daffodils. I didn't know if you had any insight on what might be causing that.
What do you mean frilly, Pamela?
Many more leaves than the normal daffodil. They're almost like a little puffy.
And the flower is pretty?
They don't last very long. If you pick them, they're gone in a couple days.
They might need dividing. If they've been in the ground for years and years and years and years, they might need to be dug up and divided. But daffodils are pretty tough plants. I doubt if they have a fungus. What you might be seeing is that the original daffodils may have seeded themselves and begun to naturalize, and what you have is a reversion to whatever the original daffodil was, rather than the hybrid that was probably planted.
Okay, so you think if I divided some of these and just see what happens, and whether they return it all to their normal glory?
Yeah, that's what I would do. Wait till the leaves start turning yellow, as you would normally, and then dig them up and divide them and replant them right away and see what happens next year.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Pamela.
Give it a try. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
We're talking with horticulturist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. More after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Kitty wants to know, is there something you can put in the dirt around lilies to repel the red lily leaf beetle?
Unfortunately, there isn't. There are systemic insecticides that you can put in the soil that are taken up by the lily plant, and when the lily leaf beetle bites on it, it's poison, but I frankly don't like to use those. What I do with my lilies, what I did with my lilies before the rabbits ate them, would be to be on the lookout for tiny holes in the leaves and go out there and squash any egg masses, handpick any adults I could find, and then start pretty much a weekly application for about 3 or 4 weeks of any product containing spinosad. which works very well against both the adults and the larval stages of the lily leaf beetle. And I've managed to keep my lilies pretty beetle-free in that regard. So I would avoid the systemic insecticides and go with the spinosad, which is more of a biological-friendly approach. That works.
Mm-hmm. So that was going to be my question for people who don't know what spinosad is. It's for an organic gardener, spinosad is okay?
Yes, it's a byproduct of a fermentation of a soil organism, soil bacterium. So it's very safe. It works on systems in insects that humans and mammals, dogs and cats and other and birds, don't have. Mm. So it only works on the insect. It does not work on people or pets.
And the good news is, it's a few years back, maybe more than a few years now, you were part of an experiment with this parasitic wasp.
Yes.
And
yes.
Hopefully this is spreading so that the rest of us can benefit from this wasp.
One of the test sites was my yard. So, and I have seen, for the first several years, there was no impact. I collected larvae and sent them off to the University of Rhode Island, and they could recover the parasitoid. But it took probably 6 or 7 years for them to build up in sufficient numbers in the population to become established. And now I still have lily leaf beetle, but nowhere near the numbers that I used to. They're tolerable, they're manageable, and I feel confident in planting lilies again, except for the bunnies.
Right. So. Always something.
Yes.
Sandy is calling from Harwich. Hi, Sandy.
Hi there, Mindy, and this is a wonderful program. Always glad to hear that Roberta is there.
Oh, thank you.
I have two issues. I was able to, I thought I was lucky, and I got some fresh horse manure this past fall.
Mm-hmm.
I put it on my raised bed gardens, and I put it on some perennials that I didn't have time to plant, but I heeled them into the ground and covered them with the manure.
Okay.
It did not decompose over the winter, not at all. So I know it's a very hot substance, and I wonder if there might be something you could suggest that I could do to still have a garden this year.
Well, what you put it on, say, September, October, that time of year?
Yep.
It's fine.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, okay. Six months right. Is fine. Just till it under into your vegetable garden, and you should be fine.
Good. Well, that was easy.
Yeah. Yes.
Great. Thanks,
all right,
Sandy.
Thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Kathy is calling from Wellfleet. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a call about a beech plum that I put in last year.
Uh-huh.
I'm very close to the bay and decided to really go with some natural shrubs and put in three of them, actually. And they were doing very well. And then one day I came out and I found a deer eating one of them down quite a ways, almost, to a foot off the ground. So I shoot him away and put little fences around them. Now, after the winter, that particular one doesn't have any budding or anything. Do you think it's lost? Should I replace it or should I just wait and see if there's any greening?
I would wait. Again, I like to err on the side of caution with plants, and I've learned from experience that if I'm too eager to pull something out because I think it's dead, inevitably it turns out it was fine and I should have left it alone.
Oh, yeah.
So I would wait. I do find myself out in the garden with a very small penknife. And if I think something's dead, I make a very tiny nick on the bark to see if it's green underneath, and then I don't remove the bark. I just make a little nick and then immediately flap the bark back into place, and it sort of stays. Right. If it's green underneath, the wood is fine. If it's brown, clearly it's dead. But if it's green, just be patient. It's still, such a long winter and even spring. Last week we had snow on the ground again. So I think we're all eager for things to spring to life, but there's a normal progression of awakening in the landscape, and some things are still sleeping.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Kathy, thanks for the call. Priscilla says, can you talk about pruning and fertilizing a variety of fruit trees? Is it too late? What kind of fertilizer? I have apples, pear, apricot, plum, and Asian pear.
Well, pruning, I like to say, is both an art and a science, regardless of whether it's fruit trees or ornamental trees and shrubs. It's normally you want to get your pruning done in March if you can. I'm sad to say, as I get older, I'm more of a fair weather gardener than a March cold, crappy day gardener. So I prune in April, as early in the month as I can get outside. It's getting a little late, but you could still do it. If these are well-established trees, generally you want to look at them and look at the framework and have a central leader type tree with a series of what we call scaffold branches. And you want to prune to allow light to penetrate, to hit the fruit. Peaches and apricots are sometimes pruned to an open center. You can prune them a little heavier than you could an apple. There is a wonderful publication on pruning fruit trees at Cape Cod Cooperative Extension. And if you give them a call, 375-6690 is the main desk. They may either have a physical copy of it or can direct you to their website. In fact, you might even cut things short and just go to the website, Cape Cod Extension, one word, .org. And their fruit pruning fact sheet, it's a multi-page document, might be on that. And it's very comprehensive. So that's what I would refer
you
to.
What about the fertilizing?
Fertilizing, you know, you can fertilize now. I haven't fertilized my blueberries yet, mainly because they're still in pots and haven't gotten into the ground yet. They've been in pots for 3 years. I think it's time I prepared the soil and got them in the ground. They're part of the driveway collection. But certainly, when I was working at the fairgrounds, we didn't start work until mid-April. And I fertilized all the fruit trees and the raspberries and the blueberries in mid-April. So now's a great time. Go ahead and do it.
And she said, what kind of fertilizer?
What kind? I use 10-10-10.
10-10-10.
And if you're not an organic gardener, that's a fine fertilizer for fruit. If you are an organic gardener and you want to use an organic fertilizer, read labels of something like Plantone to see if it's appropriate for fruit trees.
All right. Chris is calling from Vineyard Haven. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just planted my potatoes.
Yep.
And some of the potatoes were almost impossible to recognize the eyes. They had just had tiny eyes on them, so I was having trouble deciding where to cut up my potato seeds.
Uh-huh.
So I was wondering, is there a trick to getting the eyes to show themselves more rapidly?
Were these certified seed potatoes that you ordered from an online company or got them at a local garden center?
They were seed potatoes.
Yeah, okay. They've been taken out of cold storage where they've been dormant for the winter, so the eyes may not be... have not started growth yet, but everywhere you see one of those little indentations, an eye will sprout from there. So I think if you cut them up according to where the little potential eyes are, you're probably fine. The cut piece should be about the size of an egg and have about two eyes on it, if possible.
Okay. So there... I shouldn't, like, cut them up and let them sit outside for a few days to possibly...
No, I'd go ahead and plant them, and you should see some growth. It's the soil temperatures down around the 4 to 5 inch depth, which is where you're planting your seed piece, is still fairly cool, about 48 degrees. So it only cover them with an inch or two of soil so that the sun will strike them and warm them up, and you should see some growth coming. It usually takes about a week to 10 days.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the phone call. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. 4626. Let's talk about rotating the garden. Mm-hmm. Now, I have three vegetable beds, and mostly the tomatoes, I guess, are what you really want to rotate. Is that true for, I mean, obviously you can't rotate the asparagus. And
no, that's there forever.
That's there. But is it important to rotate all of your vegetable crops?
I think it is. One of our callers earlier in the show mentioned that she had some clubroot on some of her cabbage. You certainly would not want to put your cabbages right back into that bed, because there has been a soil organism that will remain in that bed for quite some time that will infect your cabbage. I would probably not put any of my coal crops in that bed for at least 3 years. And when I do, I would make sure that I'm liming that bed to about 7.2, which is a little higher than we normally recommend, but that inhibits the organism that causes clubroot. But keep your cabbages out of that bed for at least 3 years. I rotate. I have a sort of just a little pattern that I follow from year to year, particularly my tomatoes, because one of my beds has had problems with verticillium wilt, and I plant heirloom tomatoes, which are not resistant. So I have to be careful that I'm not putting tomatoes in there, particularly on an annual basis. So I would say the tomatoes, the peppers, and eggplants, which are all subject to fusarium and verticillium in the soil, should definitely be rotated. All of your coal crops, cabbages, broccoli, cauliflower, which get clubroot, should all be rotated. I don't see a big problem with growing beets in the same spot or carrots in the same spot, but just on general principle, if I'm rotating my other crops, they have to go into that area at some point, so I rotate the beets and carrots and lettuce as well.
Okay. What about preventative pest control? Is there anything we can do thinking ahead?
Well, I am a big fan of, particularly at this time of year, using row covers in the garden, particularly, again, on the coal crops, which get cabbage maggot, which get that green cabbage worm. As soon as I put them into the ground, I set up little aluminum hoops over the bed and cover the whole bed with floating row cover, which you can buy at garden centers. You can get through mail order catalogs like Johnny's or Territorial Seed or something like that. And it's one of the principles of integrated pest management. You put a barrier between the pest and the plant. Sunlight, water, wind, air movement all penetrate the row cover, but the insects don't. Right. Neither do the rabbits. So that's a great preventative measure. Rotating is preventative. In terms of using actual materials like insecticides, I do use spinosad preventatively on some crops. Other crops, I don't seem to have a lot of problems, so I do nothing until I have a problem, and then I examine what I might do. If it's a wet, rainy year and we don't want to have lots of early blight on our tomatoes, I will start using something like Actinovate I want to say Subdue, but I don't. Is that the name of it?
I don't think so.
having a senior moment here. It starts with an S. I'll remember it when I leave the studio.
Of course.
I'll start that when I plant my tomatoes out in the field and just come by, read the label. If it's a 7 to 10 day interval, then I'll put an application on every 7 to 10 days.
I know we say this all the time, but it's so true. If you are gardening organically, your plants are going to be healthier, and you're not going to have some of the problems that. We got to think about what we're putting in the soil.
Yeah.
Also, can get down into our water table.
It can. Well, I think the biggest thing about gardening, whether you're organic or not, if you have a healthy soil, if you're adding organic material, manures or compost or what have you, annually, if you're constantly building up the population of soil microbes and earthworms and everything, a healthy soil supports a healthy plant. And you have, I think, I can't prove it, but what I've seen in my own garden at the demonstration garden is if you have healthy soil, you have healthy plants, you have fewer pest problems.
Absolutely. We have only about 30 seconds or so, but just mentioning impatience, we still have that problem.
We still have that problem. Don't plant it. Ticks are active. The adult ticks are out there. I've already picked them off my dog. So start doing tick checks, do preventative things on your pets. You don't want Lyme disease.
Exactly. Roberta Clark, horticulturist and entomologist, it's so great to see you back.
It's great to be back.
We'll see you next month.
That's right.
Thanks. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vinz produces The Point, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.